Hi, everybody. Welcome to Kindred Skulls. My name is Matt Friess. I'm here with my co-host, Nick Olson. We're here recording Thursday night. As we've talked about, we're planning to, throughout the season, record Thursday night. We might actually get some live recordings going live to YouTube while we're recording in here. That's kind of still in the works, but we're hoping to get there. And the podcast should come out to your feed, you know, Friday morning, kind of at this rate. Maybe Friday afternoon, kind of depends on when we're available to push it out. But
it's not there Friday morning when you wake up. Blame Greg.
Exactly.
Greg's fault.
It really is. If you think about it, I could make a very strong argument for that.
If you haven't given us a 5-star review, I blame Greg for that too. So
absolutely.
If you think 4 stars, that's Greg's fault. That -1 star, that's all Greg's fault.
All right. Well, there you have it. You know, it's basically all Greg's fault. Everything that's possibly bad with this podcast can be blamed on Greg. But man,
they're also Greg's fault. So
we have started bagging on Greg already. Nick, anything else you want to hit on before we jump into this thing?
Well, let's dive in. Big news this week is the Vikings made a trade for a quarterback. So that's not something that happens every week. They traded a 2024 seventh. It's conditional on for Nick Mullins from the Las Vegas Raiders, which is pretty exciting. I think Kellen Mond and Sean Manning had every opportunity to earn the starting back or the backup job at quarterback, and neither of them did anything to earn it. So Mullins isn't guaranteed the job, but I don't think you make this trade. I don't think you make this effort unless you're pretty disappointed with Mond and Manning and you are pretty confident that Mullins upgrades the QB room. And I'm pretty confident he does. Fans obviously will remember him. He had a nice drive against the Vikings when we played the Raiders in week one. So they were able to see him there. And Kwesi Adofo-Mensah has experience with Mullins. He's a... he's a good quarterback. Obviously, he put up crazy good stats, which you have to do, give the normal Shanahan discount. Like, if you just look at a stat sheet, Jimmy Garoppolo looks like a top five quarterback. Obviously, that's not the case. Same thing with Nick Mullins. Yep. You look at his stats, he looks like a starting caliber quarterback. He's not that. He's an accurate thrower of the football, generally accurate. He's reads the field well. He can execute things in rhythm on time. He's not like Kellen Mond, going to be hitching 10 times back there. Doesn't know how to read a defense quickly enough. Doesn't know when to pull the trigger fast enough. So he does things well. He's a hard worker on the whiteboard, at least by reputation. You don't necessarily see it on the football field, but I think the tape study shows. Main weakness with him is I don't think he has like a very good arm. He struggles, especially to throw downfield. Big part of that is because, you know, he's not throwing things on a rope. He's throwing rainbows, and those are a lot more likely to get, give the defender a chance to make a break on the ball. So he's a little limited with what you can do on a condensed NFL football field. But I think for the price, you know, it's a 2024 seventh, which is as close to zero as possible almost. And it's conditional. He just has to be active. So basically, if they decide that he's worth rostering and he'll be the active backup on game day, the seventh will kick in. But if you think he's good enough and he upgrades Manning or Mond, I think that's worth it. So do you have any other thoughts on Mullins?
So first things first, you know, there's a bunch of stats that were thrown out there, like most passing yards for quarterback in his first 16 games. Besides, like, Justin Herbert or something. I don't remember who it was. Absolutely ridiculous. The number of games he's had with a passer rating over so much. First of all, passer rating's a bad stat. Second of all, like you said, those stats are inflated by Kyle Shanahan. This isn't some sort of secret starting quarterback, you know, starting caliber quarterback that we're getting. But I think he is a quality backup. I know people were talking about somebody like Gardner Minshew or, like, you know, just some of the more name-recognizable backup quarterbacks around the league. I think he's a lot closer to that level where he's the guy who's not going to come in. I don't think he has the upside of a Case Keenum run just in his play style and his game, right? And Case Keenum was like playing with fire that whole season, right? There was a lot of luck involved in the success of that season, but I don't think he quite has that Case Keenum level upside as a player. But I think the world is not on fire if Kirk Cousins misses 3 to 4 games. If Kirk Cousins misses the entire season, the Vikings season is screwed, right? And I don't think there are very many teams where you can say that the team season is not screwed. I think Tyler Huntley is one of the best backup quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think Tyler Huntley won a single game for the Ravens last year as a starter, right? Like, and he played well throughout that, and they were close in very many of those games, but he didn't end up winning any of them. I think that's part of, you know, just the nature of the NFL is it's hard to win football games, you know, with your starter, so it's going to be way harder with the backup level guy. The second thing I want to say is that I appreciate this trade from a Kwesi Adofo-Mensah perspective because A, we were willing to not just sit with Sean Mannion as a backup quarterback for another year, even though Kellen Mond likes that. Kirk Cousins, sorry, likes that. And B, we didn't panic when we realized our backup quarterback situation was very bad and give up meaningful capital, right? A second round pick, a seventh round pick that's conditional, 1 year removed, is about as little as you can give up for a player as possible. Now, that condition is almost guaranteed to hit, right? So it's basically a seventh round pick unless something went catastrophically wrong. But at the end of the day, like, that's very, very little that we're giving up. And I appreciate that from that perspective, considering Rick's penchant for, you know, panic trades at the beginning of the season. I saw Chris Herndon got cut by the Texans or something, you know, during training camp this year. So that kind of brought that back to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's only a seventh, which is, you know, Spielman stockpiled those sevenths, but I think it's important to keep in mind, like, a seventh is basically just a priority undrafted free agent. Like, if you miss somebody in the seventh round, a lot of times they will be there in undrafted free agency. And so it's very little to give up. You have that roster spot with you, regardless of whether or not you have that seventh rounder. So I think it's very little to give up, but I also like that they were aggressive about it. They could have just waited until roster cut downs and crossed their fingers that they were one of the 10 teams that got the claim on Mullins if he would have been just straight up waived. This way, they guarantee he's the right guy. He has experience in the Kyle Shanahan scheme, which is a little different from like the McVay-esque thing that Kevin O'Connell is bringing in. But Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, both descendants of Jay Gruden in Washington, both, you know, part of the Mike Shanahan, Gary Kubiak scheme. So there's a lot of crossover. There's a lot of overlap there. So he's the things that he's good at and that Kyle Shanahan like made him look good at. Well, I think Kevin O'Connell can also make him look good at. So I think it's worth, I wouldn't say pay a premium because it's only a future seventh, but I think it's a good cost. I like the strategy. I like what it does. I don't think it like changes the outlook or like, you know, the win total of the Vikings, but I think it's a sign of good team management, good roster building. So
yeah, okay. It's a minimal cost for a clear upgrade at a position that matters in the NFL, right? Like I said, three or four games, it matters a lot to have Nick Mullins. So I think that's fair.
The Packers week 16 last year gives the Vikings a fighting chance in a way that Sean Mannion and Kellen Mond don't. So it's kind of that simple.
Yep, exactly. So other notable roster cut was Harrison Hand, who had some playing time with us previously, was kind of a surprise cut at corner. I mean, I didn't think he was going to make the roster, although I thought he was on the roster fringe, so it's not that shocking. But I thought he also played pretty well in the week 2 game against the 49ers, so it was kind of interesting from that perspective. But I guess it brings up, you know what, we'll table that discussion for later, actually. So why don't we get into that preseason week 2 game? And I think the first thing we want to talk about is the good, right? And the positives coming from the game. And I think there's one big number one with a bullet positive from this game. That's the play of T.Y. McGill on the defensive line there. First of all, I absolutely love the sack dance. I hadn't actually watched the Raiders game when we did last week's podcast. So I went back and I hadn't watched the defense. I watched the offense. So I went back and rewatched the defense. And that first sack, he's doing the T.Y. dance. He gets a coach on the sideline to do it. He's doing it again this week. I absolutely love it. That's the kind of charisma we need. Second of all, he's been legitimately good. Like, I literally pulled 15 plays from the 49ers game where he is winning, right? Where he is like objectively winning the rep. And that's really difficult for a defensive lineman to do. Like, you can, if an offensive lineman loses 15 times in an NFL game, I'm pretty sure I'd cut them on the spot, honestly. Like, it's not easy. He's quick off the snap. He's winning with that burstiness. He has the ability to get off of blocks. And then there were a couple plays in the run game that were really nice. He made a goal line stop basically by himself where he took on a double team and ended up taking the running back down. Now, he did give up some ground. It started at the 2. It would have been a touchdown if it had started at the 1, right? But, like, he's shown the ability to at least stand up and run defense along with having pass rush prowess, and I think that's really valuable. And something that, honestly, to me, I think I need to find a way to get him on the roster. I think we got very good defensive line depth in general, but to me, I think he's earned a roster spot from his play through 2 games. I don't know how you feel about it, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've seen a very valid criticism, which is that he's doing this a lot against a lot of 3rd and 4th stringers. And that's true to an extent. You know, you have to take into account the matchups and the fact that he isn't going up against, like, you know, future starters, or even a lot of guys he's going up against are going to be waived by the time we get to 53 man cutdowns. But I still think a lot of the things he's doing translates. He has, like, a very, very good first step, and he's very, very good on top of not just having great initial burst. He's great at timing the snap. You know, when he got that it was encroachment, but he was able to get that goal line forced fumble. And he was able to do that because he's very, very good at, like, going as soon as the ball is snapped. And so, you know, not everybody had, like, Danielle Hunter, for example, has a very good first step, but he's not always the best at timing his snap. He can be a little late to get off the ball, despite being an elite all-around player. McGill has both of those, and those things translate regardless of how good the guys you're going up against do. A lot of the other things some of those sacks came on, like, very, very good pass rush moves that he has in his toolkit. So he's just kind of a crafty, somebody made the comparison to Tom Johnson. He kind of gives that Tom Johnson vibe. He's like, I think 280, 290 type pounds. So kind of like
the size and then the career path, right? I think are the perfect Tom Johnson comparison. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about this guy played 46 snaps in 2 games, and on 1/3 of them either had a run stop or pressure. He has 4 sacks in 2 games, 9 pressures, 6 run stops. And that's across 46 snaps. So 1/3 of every snaps is either he's stuffing the ball at the line of scrimmage or he's pressuring the quarterback. That's insane. So even when you grant that, like, he's going up against easy competition, and for the most part he is. He did some against, you know, earlier in the games in the 2nd quarter or whatever, but for the most part it has. But even when you take that into account, like, he's the highest graded player, defensive interior defensive lineman, in this preseason. And granted, it's 2 games, preseason, this stuff isn't predictive, but from just looking at the tape, he's a good player. I think he's earned his way onto the roster. So that's always fun to root for these sort of underdogs who've now made it after, like, you know, going in and out of the year, bouncing off rosters from the back and practice squad. So it's a fun guy to root for.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like Aaron Donald against 3rd and 4th stringers, right? So hopefully that translates
to... Which is all you can ask him to do, you know?
Yeah, that's all you can ask him to do. That's all you can ask him to do. Hopefully that translates to somebody who's a solid rotational interior pass rusher, because I don't think that's a quality we really have on our roster either. So I think he kind of fills a hole there.
One other guy I want to shout out, very similar to T.Y. McGill, is Jonathan Bullard, who played earlier in the game, and he hasn't played nearly as much snaps, but was also really, really effective, I think, particularly in the run game, although he did show some interesting things in the pass game as well. I think that's pretty critical, because Donatell always keeps at least 6 interior defensive linemen, and that's a bit of a shift, because we're used to only keeping, like, 4 of them. But with a 3-4 defense, you're playing a lot more, especially on base downs, on those odd fronts, you're going to have 3 interior defensive linemen. So you need to have a lot of depth. So at least 5, probably 6, I think, interior defensive linemen. I think Bullard really fits that mold. He's another undersized guy, but I think he's kind of a perfect base end if Lynch is your backup nose guard. So I feel like he played very well both games. He's very stout in run defense. He doesn't, you know, he kind of is able to hold his gap, but he's also able to penetrate. And so I think he's also somebody. And he's you know, in contrast to McGill, has been doing it against the other team's starters, the other team's starting offensive linemen or their backups. So he's doing up. It translates against NFL players. So I feel like he's another guy who earned a roster spot these last few weeks.
Yeah, on Bullard, like, when I was watching this McGill game, right? It was like, okay, I absolutely need to figure out how this guy's going to make the roster, because he needs to make the roster. I understand he's playing against third stringers, that sort of thing. And I'm looking at it, and it is a little bit difficult to fit him on there, because I thought Bullard played great in that game as well, and he was clearly favored by the coaches, right? He's playing over McGill on the depth chart going into this game, and he played phenomenally. You know, it was only like 10 snaps or something like that, but he was very effective, and he made a couple plays. Like, he made a couple plays on the defensive, made a couple plays work for the defensive line. So I think you have to keep him, and it becomes hard then, because you have Harrison Phillips, Dalvin Tomlinson obviously going to be there. Armon Watts is penciled in as the starter right now. And then you have the depth of Lynch and Bullard, and now you have to fit T.Y. McGill. So I think we're going to have to fit six people there. And, you know, maybe Otemewa is on the outside looking in, kind of that conversation.
Otemewa and Jalen Twyman's had some really great moments. And Twyman as well, yeah. Also outside looking in. So, yeah, it's tough. But, the way these McGill and Bullard have played, it's hard to put them outside too. So it's a good problem to have, though. So
yeah.
Those are two guys. I think there are a lot more Vikings who played their ways off the roster. We kind of talked about Mond and Mannion. But, you know, both of these games, Vikings lost. This game, in contrast to the 49ers game, in contrast to the Raiders game, I thought the Vikings lost, but they actually looked like a very competent team. I think this game against the 49ers, there was a lot of downsides. So I think there are a lot of guys who played their way out of a roster spot.
Yeah.
Does anybody jump out at you besides Mond and Mannion?
So if we flip to that side of the ball, yeah, and talk about playing out of the roster spot, I got two guys. Well, so Zach Davidson, I think, kind of hurt himself. Now, I feel bad for Zach Davidson, because I think it was kind of a cascade effect of he had the one drop, and then he was in his head, and then he just kept dropping the ball. Like, I think there's probably still something to work with, and the drops aren't necessarily a characteristic. Maybe they are. You know, I haven't been to any practices or anything, but I hope that the drops aren't a characteristic of his game, and he just needs more time to get it together and kind of reapproach this mentally, right? Because that was a struggle in the game. The other player, to me, is Janarius Robinson. I thought that Janarius Robinson did not look good at all. And I've been high on Janarius Robinson, right? I had him on our 53-man roster when we did that in the offseason. And I just don't know if he's a fit for this defense, man. Like, he was picked on in coverage. He's not fluid dropping back. And I think he got decimated in the run game on one play, or decimated as a pass rusher a couple times. Like, he just hasn't been effective. So those are two names that jump out to me.
Yeah. Robinson, clearly, I don't think is ready for NFL action, which is a disappointment. You know, you hope with the capital investment, he was a fourth rounder last year. Then he missed the whole year with injury. You're hoping he could start to develop into something. But I think it's another year on the practice squad for him, because other than like being fairly good on stunts, you know, he can loop around OK, I think. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look like he belongs out there. The other one I would throw out, and I agree with the two you mentioned, but I would also throw out Ole Udo, who I kind of feel bad for, because he's another one of those players that they tried him at one position, yep, and it didn't work out, and they moved him to another one. He probably never really had time to settle in anywhere. They tried him at guard for 16 games last year, and it started out good, but then got really bad for a while. So he just looked completely outmatched there against the 49ers. And credit to the San Francisco, they've got a very good backup defensive line. Like, a lot of their backup guys are very good players. You know, whether that was Kinlaw or whether that was that guy they took at the top of the second round, Drake Jackson. They've got a lot of dudes there. But Udo stood out in a bad way.
Yes, compared to the absolutely. Rest of the he absolutely did.
He's still punching way too wide. His pass sets and movements look like he's out of balance. He's sort of like moving around awkwardly, like a stumbling giraffe a little bit. He loses his balance easily, you know, falls on his butt. It's bad. And that's on top of, we know he has a tendency to hold. We know he has a tendency to overset or underset. That's exposed even more on the outside. With that wide punch, he's also very susceptible to just getting bowled over and backwards, which is, you know, combine that with the balance problems, it's a bad problem to have. And that was, you know, a lot of that describes his pass protection, but he was also not a positive in the run game either. So I feel bad because I feel like in some ways he was a developmental player that the Vikings kind of screwed up. But at the same time, after so many years, I think this is his fourth year in the NFL. He doesn't really fit a guard. I would rather have, obviously, Chris Reed or, Jesse Davis or somebody come in there if Ed Ingram or somebody goes down. And at tackle, I would rather have Blake Brandel the way he's played this preseason. It's a complete opposite story. He's looked great. Or Jesse Davis, who played competent, well, maybe not competent, but like solid backup level tackle play for the Dolphins. So I don't see a scenario in which I would want Ole Udo out there, and I don't see much upside in him anymore now that it's his fourth year. So I feel like he's played his way out of a roster spot, which is a disappointment for somebody who I think once had a lot of upside. But he's another one of those players that I think has not made the most of these opportunities.
Yeah, I agree. That was my takeaway from his play in this game as well. We had kind of been penciling him in as a solid swing tackle, like all offseason, right? As somebody we thought could do that. And just his performance in this game was not good. It's sad to say that this is where we're at. But I just don't think he's played well enough to warrant making the roster as a swing tackle. And like you said, I think Blake Brandel's played better. Any other rookies, that you want to discuss the performance in the game? We're going to talk a little bit more about Caleb Evans since he played the whole game. So maybe besides Evans, any other rookies you want to talk about their performances?
I would say I was impressed, I think, by most of the rookie class that played. I think Andrew Booth. Obviously, he left with that injury, which thankfully turned up to just be an re-aggravation of his ankle injury. When it first happened, you weren't sure if he tore his Achilles or tore his ACL. It looked really bad because it was a non-contact injury that they immediately ruled him out for. So that put a pall over the entire game, I think, as soon as it happened. So thankfully, he's okay. It sounds like he'll be ready to go week one, even if he's kind of shut up for the rest of the preseason. But I thought he played well. He was fluid in coverage. He's a little, he has like these herky-jerky movements that make me feel like maybe he's not fully confident, especially when the receiver is at the break or at the top of their routes. So I feel like he's still sort of building his confidence as an NFL wide receiver, but movements were good. He read routes quickly. I feel like he was pretty sticky in coverage, and there were occasions when the quarterback looked at his receiver in the progression and Booth was able to take that away and force the quarterback off his read. One of McGill's sacks actually came off Booth, sort of shutting down that receiver, covering him, and forcing the quarterback to come off his primary read, which allowed time for the sack. So he was good. I thought, we'll talk about Evans. I thought Evans was, there was more good.
Yeah,
Asamoah, I think.
So Booth, I agree with you. I thought he was good. I'm not sure if he's a full-time starter yet, right? And it sounds like Cam Dantzler is probably going to be our starting outside corner week one. It sounds like they really like what they've seen from him in camp and everything, and he's played really well per beat reporters and stuff there. But I will roll it into Brian Asamoah. I think he's very up and down still. On run plays and on run action, Brian Asamoah takes two steps forward immediately. I've seen Eric Eager tweeting out, like, for linebackers, ground covered over expected. He's got some weird formula called ground covered over expected, or, depth gained in pass coverage or something. And, like, you see the best linebackers in that don't bite on play action. Like, Eric Kendricks, Darius Leonard, Fred Warner don't bite on play action and actually don't cover a ton of ground on run action. And I think that's kind of the meta of the NFL. Asamoah has the opposite problem. Now, that leads to some very impressive run defense plays. He blew up another running back in the hole this week, I think, and he had the one last week where he had that on the outside run where he just worked through traffic and kind of blew the play up. But he does bite on he's very susceptible to play action. It's great for him in the run game. But, I'm definitely worried about it in the pass game moving forward. Like, I honestly don't think I'd want him to be a nickel player for us. I'd rather have him in base where teams are more likely to run, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. You see the upside there, but also a player who, kind of like Booth, you probably don't want to have him out there. And if there are, they're going to be rookie mistakes. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like what happened with Jeff Gladney. Obviously, sad situation, rest in peace. But like when Jeff Gladney played as a rookie, it was not what was supposed to happen. He was not intended to start, but then injuries happened and Holton Hill happened, and then he was thrown in there. And he flashed a lot of upside, but ended up being like from an NFL perspective, that was not a good cornerback year for Gladney. So I feel that way about Booth. I feel that even more strongly about Asamoah, that there's probably more bad than good right now, but the good that he flashes shows a lot of high upside potential. Flipping to the other side of the ball, the other guy I'd call out is Ed Ingram. Obviously, I think that sack that he gave up to Kinlaw probably leaves a little bit bad of a taste in your mouth, but that was a fixable, I mean, it's bad, you don't want to give up a sack, but he kind of drifted, he overset, or maybe if he didn't initially overset, he kind of drifted too far wide, opened himself up to an inside counter, going up against Kinlaw, who's, I think, a starting caliber defensive tackle. You know, that's it doesn't take much to get screwed, especially when you're like one-on-one with like no inside help from the center there, with which is what was happening because it was a third down. So I think that is a fixable thing. You know, it's just, you know, be careful about when you're setting out to the outside to somebody who's shaded a little bit farther outside. But otherwise, I thought Ingram played very well for the rest of that entire first drive. He was, you know, that touchdown drive, he was moving. He kind of created the movement along with Schlottman to create that touchdown. I thought he did another good job climbing to the second level on opportunities where he got to. And in pass protection, I thought he had lots of other pass protection reps that looked pretty good. So you want him to have a perfect clean sheet and not give up any sacks. But, you know, that was just one rep. And I feel like it's a fixable rep. And I feel like there was also a lot of good from Ed Ingram. So I would say overall, I came away feeling like, yes, this guy's ready to be a starter, even though we have some low lights here. So I don't know if you have other thoughts on it.
To me, Ed Ingram should be our starting right guard. And I think that the sack is bad. It's a loss by him. But I think he also recovered okay on it. Like, Mond could have helped him out there in a couple of different ways. He held onto the ball for too long on that snap. And that's it. And we haven't gone too deep into Mond. Mond, I think, did a better job processing in this game. Like, he seemed to be, but he's still a slow processor. Like, previously, he was late getting to throws and that sort of thing. This, he just takes his time going through reads, but he does it at kind of an acceptable speed. This was a case where he was too slow to process. He had space to move in the pocket. So, like, Ingram could have driven him past him had he moved appropriately. Now, it's still on Ingram, the sack, because he overset initially and he lost. So that's a technique error by Ingram that caused the loss. It's not, I'm not saying it's not, the sack's not on Ingram. But, you know, there are ways to mitigate that if you're the quarterback as well, right? So it's kind of a little bit on both of them. But the final player I just wanted to shout out, because I think he's got a fringe spot at the roster just because of how weak our tight end depth is Nick Muse. I think he looks like he belongs as a blocker, which is important for a tight end. Like, I thought he was a quality blocker at NC State, and he had a couple of nice catches. Like, he's not a dynamic receiving threat, right? Like, he's not going to change the game as a tight end, as a dynamic receiving threat. Guess what? None of the players on our team outside of Irv Smith, none of our tight, like Ben Ellison, barely a receiver at all. Same with Johnny Munt, right? Like, I don't expect them to do anything either. Muse, you know, I watched him and I guess I'd compare what I think he can be to the Vikings to David Morgan. I think he can develop into a really quality blocker. I don't think he's at the level of a blocker that David Morgan was, honestly, when Morgan came out of college. Morgan was a phenomenal blocker when he came out, even out of, you know, a small school in terms of UTSA. But I think that he can give you a little bit as kind of a reliable pass catcher and a blocker, and that's valuable in a second tight end. So I think he's got an outside shot at the roster, to me.
Yeah, I agree. I would probably still put Ellison. I think Ellison's been also a standout blocker. So Muse just seems pretty raw, but he had a good game. Don't want to take that away from him. So, whereas before I'd give him like a 0% chance, now I'd give him like a 10% chance, which is something. So, good game for Muse. Okay, do we want to dive into the tape talk section of our preseason All-22 analysis?
Absolutely. Like, this defense was a lot of fun to watch, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they got points scored on them, but like, it's a good defense. It was they shut down the run. There were some mistakes in coverage, but schematically, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, and so if you watch this game and you go back to listen to our very long, we took probably like an hour and a half podcast to go over the Fangio style defense, right? That Ed Donatell's bringing. Obviously, you know, we're just going to call it the Fangio defense because everybody calls it the Fangio defense. Obviously, Ed Donatell has had a big part of that for the past 10 years, given that he's been with Fangio that entire time. But, you know, on this defense, we see primarily cover six snaps, right? We call it, the defense calls it cover six when it's to the strong side and cover eight when it's to the weak side, when quarters is to the weak side. And you see that a lot, and we saw that a lot in this game, and I think it's very effective. The number one thing that I like about it is, particularly cover eight, where you have quarters to the weak side, is how you take away the number three option to the other side if it's a 3-by-1 formation. Also, it gives you a cap over the passing strength by having cover two to that strength side. So the idea is to always have four players over three on either side, right? So, or four players over three and then three over two, right? So you have three receivers to the one side, or two receivers in a tight end, or two receivers in a back, or what have you. You want to have four players, a safety, a couple corners, and a linebacker over that. And then the other side, you want to have a corner, a safety, and a linebacker, right? When you're a nickel, or it'd be two linebackers depending, you know, depending on base personnel, right? But keeping that relationship while also being able to help out with that three side, I think is very key. And I think it's something you're going to see from this team. So I really like seeing that consistently. And I just like the play call. I don't know.
Schematically, it just has so much like intuitive appeal. Like you'll always have numbers advantages in coverage. And you'll have that because it comes at the expense of your run defense. But you can play, if you have the horses in the stable, you can play your run defense technique. If you have the safeties that are able to fit the run from depth, you can get away with having light boxes. And that's kind of like the whole meta right now. It's why everybody's trying to adapt, you know, whether it's Fangio disciples or Staley or Joe Barry and Green Bay or whoever, like, you know, in the same way that everybody's becoming McVay, Shanahan, everybody's becoming Fangio tree in the NFL. And it's the intuitive appeal is just you're always going to have numbers advantages. You're going to limit the explosives. And you just need to have the horses in the stable up front with. And I feel like this preseason has shown that we've got that. Tomlinson and Phillips have been so effective in the run game. And, you know, we haven't seen Hunter and Za'Darius Smith, but you just have a lot of confidence in having those two sort of blue chip unhealthy edge defenders as well. And being able to see like the safeties, knowing that Harrison Smith can be relied upon to sort of fit the run, that's going to make the whole thing click. And when it does, it means, you know, like the 49ers are a very good rushing team. They're Kyle Shanahan is like the mastermind at like run design and fitting that in with the passing game and making things work and making you play all 53 and a half yards from, you know, sideline to sideline or whatever. The fact that like the Vikings were able to go up against that run defense and limit their yards per carry, I think was really effective. We saw a shout out to Booth and Evans being able to fit the run from, you know, Kyle Shanahan will challenge your corners and they were able to step up to it. But also we were able to sort of, despite having light boxes, shut down the run. And granted, it's the preseason, it wasn't against starters, but just being able to see like the scheme in action and being able to see like, yes, we'll have light boxes, but we'll still be able to shut down the run because we'll adapt to it and we'll fit from depth. And then in coverage, we're always going to have a numbers advantage, no matter who you're deploying, and whether it's a 2x2 or a 3x1 or who you're deploying where, what routes they're running. We're going to aim to have a numbers advantage, and that'll allow turnovers and it'll allow us to limit explosives. So being able to see that sort of play out in this game was exciting to see how it'll fit once they actually get the star players in there.
Yeah, and we saw examples of that run defense technique. Two plays that stood out to me were, one, the big Lewis Cine play that he made, that was the run stop in defense where he's coming from the second level making that play. Now, I think that might have also been a blitz, so maybe it's not the greatest example of a safety coming down from the ceiling, right, to make a play. But, you know, safeties coming from that second level, Lewis Cine gives you that ability. Harrison Smith obviously gives you that ability. He's been doing it for years. Cam Bynum, I think we'll see on that ability. That's probably my biggest question in this game is his run support. Like, I think he'll be great in coverage. But maybe we can use Lewis Cine, you know, in those roles. And then we talked about Jonathan Bullard earlier. I think that first Jonathan Bullard run stop was a great example of kind of the peak technique from defensive linemen, where they peak in one gap and then pull the defender to the other gap and are able to make the run play, the play in the run game. So, you know, controlling that offensive lineman in front of you is something that Bullard did really well in that play. And obviously I think we're going to see Harrison Phillips and Dalvin Tomlinson do a really good job of this year.
Yeah, and it's not two gapping. It's not you're trying to control the guy across from you, and you have literally responsible mm-hmm. for both gaps, but being able to have the ability to put yourself in a position where you can make plays a gap over, and where guys can rally to the ball. I think you saw a lot of that. There was a lot of purple swarming on guys behind the line of scrimmage, and even if the first guy, you know, like Lewisine is still tackling a little high, but even though he did that, you know, he was met by three other guys in the hole, and they were able to come away with the tackle. So seeing that click gets me excited for how this will work once it's not just the third stringers, but the starters.
Yep. So, you know, we talked about the defense. Another player who played almost every single snap on defense, a rookie that we were kind of excited about after watching the tape, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah was really excited about after we drafted him. Nick, Caleb Evans, why don't we go and break down his game a little bit here since he played the most out of anybody, I think.
Yeah, so I mentioned you see the willingness to get physical, to get in there in the run game. I was really impressed. He was going up, especially some of the tackles he was forced to make on the outside against running backs. He wasn't able to finish all of those tackles, but he showed absolutely no fear in getting in there and lowering the shoulder and getting low and taking on like the full brunt of these 49ers running backs who were all very fast, all very building up a lot of speed, a lot of inertia. And being able to take them on. So I was impressed by his ability to fit the run, which, by the way, that's also really important in the Donatell scheme, because that's, you know, another thing when you're in primarily quarters alignments is you need your cornerbacks are going to be relied on a little bit more, I think, in the run game. So I saw that there. In pass coverage, I think I was impressed, but I think there's also more to work on with him. So
he's playing too far off right now is the biggest thing, yeah. I think.
And some of that, I'm not sure if it's by design, because I feel like everybody's playing far off, and that's kind of like Booth played pretty far off, and maybe that's just the scheme, is they're going to do a lot of zone stuff, and they're going to like, but yeah, they start out deep. But yeah, Evans, I feel like his college tape, he was so good in press, and that's not necessarily what he's going to be doing in Donatell's scheme. Mm-hmm. So that's something I still kind of want to see how it translates. Was there anything else about Evans' tape that jumped out at you?
There was one play on a crossing route where he stuck really well with the crossing route. It was an incomplete pass. I believe the player was targeted, but he was in position to make the play, or at least in as good position as he could be to make the play. And if I'm not mistaken, that player was Danny Gray, who was like a state champion sprinter and runs a 4.3 and gets a lot of hype in 49ers camp for being really, really fast. So that, from an athletic standpoint, to me, was just impressive to see from him, to see that he sticks. You know, the athleticism holds up at the NFL level. I didn't really question that, but it's always nice to get confirmation, I suppose.
Yeah, like, you know, it's, we talked about this before when we drafted him and when we did our, like, you know, day two guys or discussion, but Evans, you think of those like height, weight, speed profile guys as being like stash them and develop mm-hmm. them and see if they can turn into something. But Evans is the unique height, weight, speed guy where I feel like he's ready to contribute as a rookie. And, you know, we just went over some of the things he has to clean up first. But you look at his tape, and I feel like there are a lot of really quality snaps against like solid competition. And so having that confirmation against the 49ers, I think, is encouraging, even if, you know, ideally I don't want my fourth round rookie in there as a rotational guy. I feel like he'd be up for it, which is not something you can normally say about cornerbacks, which is such a tough position to come to transition from college to the NFL, going up against NFL wide receivers. So encouraging stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to wrap it up for the Tape Talk segment this time. And we do have one other topic that we want to hit on quick before getting out of here. Nick, you released a 53-man roster of our zone coverage earlier this week. I think you've got a bet going on with Luke Braun NFL about some tweet that you might have to send out, so that could be kind of fun. But why don't you...
Whoever has the more accurate 53-man roster gets to force the other one to do whatever co-tweet they want.
Oh, man. It's gonna be an interesting day on Twitter that day.
I'm already at a disadvantage because Luke had the hot take that Ryan Wright would be the punter. We didn't talk about this at the top, but Jordan Berry surprise cut our incumbent punter has been defenestrated, and now we're stuck with Ryan Wright. So Luke's already got a man up on me. But
I'm just mad we didn't get the punt off. Where's the punt off? Come on, Matt Daniels, can't do this.
Where's the preseason intrigue? Now why even pay attention to what the Vikings are doing? You sucked the joy out of the whole competition.
So. Yeah, but no, on a serious note, why don't you go over, I guess, kind of, because, you know, we know the meat of the roster. We know what probably 40 players on this roster are going to be, right? I think everybody who cares enough to name a 53-man roster can probably get at least 40, right? But why don't we go over some of the interesting spots and interesting decisions on the team?
So quarterback, Cousins, I think, and Mullins, you know, unless something goes dramatically wrong or, you know, doesn't pass his physical or something crazy like that, Mullins are the two guys. Question whether Mond is worth rostering at this point as like a developmental lottery ticket. I would rather give the 53rd position to like a Chris Boyd or a Dan Chisena or somebody like that than have Kellen Mond. I also feel like Mond.
Honestly, I agree. I agree. On the practice at this point.
Like, who's going to see Mond's performances in the last couple preseason games and know everything else that he has to go with him and poach him? Like, and to poach Kellen Mond, you would have to. Some other team would have to roster Mond on their 50 on their active 53. He's not ready to be an NFL backup, so you'd have to have him as be your like developmental QB3. I just don't see that happening. It's not very likely. I mean, it may be because of the draft capital will carry, and you know somebody will see him as a reclamation product, but I don't necessarily see it. So Mannion does have like 210,000 of guarantees on his contract if they cut him. So if they kept him on the practice squad, they would still pay him that guarantees, and they wouldn't have about it, but it's such a small amount of money. I don't think it necessarily matters. I don't think because of Mullins has such a similar sort of positives list of skill sets, I don't think you necessarily need to duplicate that on the practice squad. But you know, maybe it's possible we see Mannion on the practice squad as opposed to Mond, and they're just going to try and, you know, say Mond go somewhere else, see if you can get a fresh start somewhere else. So we'll see. But I don't think there's that much intrigue there. After you don't make the Mullins trade and anticipating that, you know, Mond or Mannion are worthy of a roster spot. So running back, obviously Cook is the guy, Madison's the backup, and Wongwu and Chandler are the RB3 and RB4. And there's the question, they cut Jake Bargus early, like they cut him August 16th, so like 10 days ago, they didn't need to cut him that early. People say like, oh, well, maybe like, you know, we're going to go full Rams and not have a fullback the same way the Rams haven't. Not going to happen. I mean, they've been practicing a bunch of lead stuff, a bunch of fullback-specific run stuff in camp, and they've been resting their starters, which is why you haven't seen CJ Ham. Yep. So, and they would only save $2 million, which is not worth it for Ham, who's, if he's not a starter, he's like a solid rotational, plays 20, 30, 40% of your snaps. So I think there's a question about does Ty Chandler play initially, or does Ty Chandler make the roster? Initially, I was thinking no, just because... I mean, how many touches are you going to get your fourth string running back throughout the year? But with the way I've seen how Kevin O'Connell uses his running backs this preseason, where they line up wide a lot, and that gives you a pre-snap zone man tell. You know, if they have a linebacker up against the running back, it's probably man coverage. If they have a cornerback, it's probably zone coverage. Mm-hmm. And if they have a linebacker up against Kenny Wongwu, like you have him run like a go route downfield because he can run a 4.28 40. And if you've got like a cornerback against them, well, that means that like Justin Jefferson or Adam Thielen has like a linebacker or like a safety on them. So there's advantages, I think. And there are ways to do 21 personnel with multiple running backs as opposed to CJ Ham on the field and use them that way, too. So that's how I kind of talked myself into.
So, in addition, so for just looking so for at Chandler, tape and feeling, real quick. Player,
so.
Yeah, like I'm going to victory lap a little bit if we end up keeping four, and I think we all four running backs, because I did have that on our initial predictions when we did, you know, it was a couple months ago at this point. I just think that all four are good enough players to be able to warrant the roster spots. Honestly, and then CJ Ham on top of that, I think he's clearly on the roster. Like there should be no question about that. If you have a question, I would advise you rethink that. And I do think that he adds in a world where we don't feel comfortable in our tight ends at all. I think that adds to CJ Ham's value, right? Because you're not going to play him as a tight end. Like he can't be a tight end. He doesn't have the size to be a tight end in the NFL. But using 21 personnel can mimic using 12 personnel in a lot of ways. So that's just lacking that tight end capability that we have behind, you know, Irv Smith, who's injured, I think adds to CJ Ham's value to this team.
Yep, totally. I think wide receiver, so no disagreements yet. I think wide receiver is where you start to get a little interesting because the first five, I think, are pretty I'm pretty confident, definitely in the first four, probably the first five, in Jefferson, Thielen, Osborne are locked into the 1-2-3. I think ISM, Amir Smith-Marset, locked into the number four. I think BC Johnson, there's a very big gap between how good and consistent BC Johnson is, and Tristan Jackson, Myron Mitchell, Jalen Naylor, Dan Chisenhut. I had Chisenhut as my sixth wide receiver on the roster, and I literally initially didn't have him off, and then once I saw that I had room for him, he was my 53rd guy I put on the roster.
Can't quit the punt gunner.
Well, I mean, he's the new Marcus Sherrills. He survived the last 2 years, and I think he's going to do it again because he just is a difference maker in special teams. He's not just like, oh, he's a good special teamer in the way that, Chris Boyd or some of the linebackers are solid special teams, but he's like a difference maker. He makes like elite plays in special teams. And yes, he also has low lights in special teams, but I feel like the total package is worth it. And I feel like that adds more value than, say, retaining Chris Boyd or, say, retaining, you know, a fifth linebacker. So
his low lights are literally him missing tackles. Like, if he begins to make those tackles, he just becomes even more elite.
That issue cropped up again this preseason, and Luke did not have Chisenhut making the roster. Luke had Jalen Naylor making the roster as the sixth wide receiver. I think it's more likely they only carry five than Jalen Naylor making the roster just because he doesn't look ready yet. I was beating the Jalen Naylor drum as soon as we drafted him, and even before it, but I just don't think he's ready to contribute as an NFL receiver. If I were to roster a sixth wide receiver just based on like their preseason and their skill, I'd probably go like Myron Mitchell or maybe Tristan Jackson. I could be talked into either.
I was going to say, I put Jackson over Mitchell, but it's not that far apart.
Yeah. And I think all these guys are safe on the practice squad too. Like nobody's going to poach like Tristan Jackson. I think Jalen Naylor is probably pretty safe too. So that's kind of where I am. Who would be your sixth if you're carrying a sixth?
For the six, it's hard. It'd probably be Chisenhut or Jackson based on their performance. Naylor obviously has the draft pick, so it wouldn't shock me if it was him. Honestly, like, I could not tell you who I think. Like, I would probably roster Chisenhut, but I can't tell you who I think the Vikings are going to keep in that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a little hard because the Spielman regime was attached to Danny Chiz.
Yeah.
But we don't know how this new regime values him. So, tight end, it's a position where I could see surprises happening because it's not inspiring, but Irv Smith, I think, and Johnny Munt are both locks. I had Ellefson as my third. Luke also had Ellefson as his third. He's had a good preseason. He blocks well. He's not an athlete, but he's an NFL caliber player, or at least he's looked like one this preseason. Zach Davidson, on the other hand, can't catch and can't block and can't contribute on special teams, which is, that's three strikes and you're out. So.
Oh yeah. I didn't even get into Zach Davidson's blocking is, oh boy.
It was awful. There were some real ugly lowlights. Like,
I feel bad because, like, it's just not, man. I don't want to roster two blocking tight ends, but we're going to roster two blocking tight ends. That's just where we're at, right? Like, it's going to happen.
And I think it's possible they waive Ellefson if like, a better receiving tight end comes on the market. It seems like it's possible there are some good tight ends who could come on the market after cutdowns. So we'll monitor that one. But for now, Ellefson's the best third tight end, and I do think they got to roll with more than just Smith and Munt, especially given Smith's injuries. So tackle, I only carried three, and I kind of previewed this a little bit, but I don't think Oli Udoh has played himself out of a spot. I think Blake Brandel has played himself into a spot with how good he's looked. And I think O'Neal and Darisaw are locks to make. You know, they're the starters, and we've got big hopes riding on those bookend tackles. So,
what do you think of Lowe there? Because I think he's kind of interesting. Like, he hasn't been great, but he hasn't been bad in preseason either. Like, I think he's been solid how he's played.
I don't dislike Lowe, but the reason I only carried three is because I would feel like if Darisaw or O'Neal got hurt, I would want Jesse Davis to come in because, like I said, he's played as like a high caliber backup for the Dolphins at tackle. And if I had to put in two backups back there, my next backup would be Brandel. I would rather have Brandel in there than Vidarian Lowe. So I feel very confident Vidarian Lowe as a practice squad investment, you know, especially given the draft capital invested. That's kind of where I was. Luke had Udoh making the roster, but it sounds like we both disagree with him there on that one. So.
Yep.
Interior offensive line, we'll just keep this plugging along. So we had the starters, Cleveland, Bradbury, Ingram, and then I had Jesse Davis, Chris Reed, and Austin Schlottman. Luke agreed on all of those. I think Jesse Davis gives you some tackle guard flexibility. Chris Reed, I think, is a solid guard and break in case of emergency center. He just can't snap. Just very small. That's a small defect. He cannot snap the ball without fumbling it. And then Austin Schlottman, I think, has earned his way onto this roster with how well he's placed, but especially in the run game. He kind of reminds me of like a little bit worse version of Garrett Bradbury, but just like very effective in the run game. Has a lot of power, I think, for kind of an undersized guy, has not been terrible in pass protection overall. Yep. He's been bad, but not terrible.
And we talked about this, like keeping six interior offensive linemen is a lot, but I think that's what we're going to end up doing. And that makes me feel better about only keeping three tackles, I think. But I agree with you across the board there. There's not much I'd add. Wyatt Davis is done for, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, I would sign of how far he's fallen that I'm not even thinking about him at this point. But man, that last Spielman roster went out not with a bang, but
the last Spielman third round. We took four guys in third round, and Why don't we flip Patrick over? Jones, we've talked about the interior defensive line, the six guys there. Edge rusher, I mean, obviously you got the top two. Wanham, I think, has played... he played pretty well in the Raiders game, actually. And in a couple snaps in the 49ers game. So I'm cautiously optimistic about DJ Wanham's chances to improve.
We dunk on Wanham a lot, but he's like a solid rotational pass rusher, I think. I wouldn't want him to be more than that, but like if he's coming in on third downs, I think you could do worse than DJ Wanham as like your NASCAR package defense.
Did you keep anybody other than Patrick Jones?
I did, and I went over this a lot because Janarius Robinson does not look like an NFL player. Luigi Villain does not look like an NFL player. So I threw in Zach McLeod, and that was less because I'd seen anything this preseason to justify it, but just the fact that he got like second team reps. So I feel like they're going to want a fifth edge rusher, and McLeod, despite being in a completely unheralded undrafted free agent, it seems like there's something about him that they like. And I didn't see enough of him to buy in, but I did have McLeod as like my sneaky, you know, that's my hot take on my 53 man. So Luke only had the four, and his justification was, I want more, but nobody else deserves it. So I find that pretty persuasive too. Would you carry a fifth?
I would not carry, like, I don't know at this point. Like, I haven't seen enough from any of the guys to interest me enough to want to take that, right? So you have Zach McLeod, who I haven't seen... I wouldn't want him playing in an NFL game, so I don't know if I can roster him, you know, from what I've seen.
I've seen nothing from McLeod this preseason that makes me think, yes, he's ready for NFL action. But the Vikings clearly have. So, and preseason is like a drop in the bucket compared to all the training camp tape that the Vikings have on these guys, too. So, I don't know.
It wouldn't shock me if we kept five guys, particularly because a linebacker, I don't know if I'd keep more than four linebackers either. So it's like our outside linebackers / line off ball linebacker depth is the biggest question mark for me on this team. So who, you know, the top three of linebacker are pretty much settled. Four, maybe five. What do you think?
I went with four because I don't think there's enough guys here to justify four. And, you know, sometimes you'll carry more linebackers for special teams purposes, but I feel like you would rather have like Chris Boyd or Dan Chisena as like your special teams dedicated like gunner or whatever. So I had Troy Dye in there. Obviously Kendrick Hicks starters Asamoah as a third round rookie. I think probably not going to see a lot of action ideally, but you know, there's upside there and he wouldn't be a disaster if he saw NFL action. And then I actually think Blake Lynch is the better player, or at least from what I've seen, he's looked like the better player.
Okay. That's the exact point I was going to make. So
yeah. But the Vikings clearly think Troy Dye is better. I mean, he started in the Raiders game when, like, Hicks was start. It was like Hicks and Troy Dye in the Raiders game that got the first snap. So he's clearly a rung above Blake Lynch, even though I think Blake Lynch, better linebacker and better special teamer. But Dye gives you a lot more athleticism, and that matters a lot in the Dontell scheme because linebackers have to fly around and fit the run quick and cover, you know, be fast to the flat with the back. So all that stuff matters. So
yeah, so no, I think Lynch is a better player. I think the team likes Dye better. I agree with you 100% there. So it's kind of an interesting question. I kind of still holding out hope that it's a little bit closer than it may seem to you. But if we flip to corner, I think, you know, the four outside guys are very well settled. Chandon Sullivan is a fifth guy, and then we need to bring in a sixth guy, I believe, based on your numbers, right? Because let's go to safety quick. I don't think there's a question about safety at all. I think it's the top three guys in Josh Metellus, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So outside
Miles
of that,
Dorn and whoever else, not, you know,
yeah.
Metellus looked, he had some plays in coverage, and he's a solid special teamer. So.
Yep. So corner, I believe to get to 53, that left six corners for you, right? So I know.
Well, we didn't do interior defensive linemen. Oh. Do you have the same, you know?
The same six, the six guys. Yeah, six guys, right?
Lynch and then Bullard McGill. So yep, yeah,
Bullard McGill.
We talked a lot about Bullard and McGill. So yeah, that leaves us with room for a sixth cornerback, unless you want to go back and add in, you know.
Nope. And I'm. You know, this isn't me coming out with anything, so I'm not too concerned on that front.
Luke and I went back and forth a lot on, like, who the sixth cornerback would be.
Yeah.
Because I was like, if Chandon Sullivan goes down, look, I like the depth at outside cornerback, but I don't want, like, Andrew Booth playing nickel. And he's, yeah, I think, would be significantly better than, like, Patrick Peterson and
neither
nickel,
do I.
Or Caleb Evans at nickel, like, those are boundary guys through and through. So I threw in Perry Nickerson, if only for the fact that he started before and Nate Hairston did at like, the nickel. So I think he is technically the backup slot guy. I think both Perry Nickerson and Nate Hairston have played poorly, and I think Perry Nickerson is hurt, too. So this is kind of, like, scrambling. Luke threw in Chris Boyd just because he's a better player, and I probably agree with that, but Chris Boyd is also another guy I would not want to play in the slot. And Luke's logic was, well, we'll just put Cam Bynum or Lewis Cine in the slot or whatever and figure it out. But, like, I feel like you got to have, like, a nickelback, because if you're, especially if, like, you're going to do dime stuff, you want to have guys who can be nickel bodies. And it's a little strange that the Vikings haven't seemed to prioritize this position. Like, Sullivan was, like, a cheap signing, and they didn't try to bolster it, and I'm not very confident about the nickel corners on this team, but maybe it is one of those things that they'll just paper over with scheme and safeties and stuff like that. So we'll see.
It's a very good question to me. I would have thought it would be Nate Hairston, but maybe my recollection's wrong. Like, I definitely saw Nate Hairston playing nickel corner. I didn't realize that Perry Nickerson had actually played over him.
He did a little bit at the start of the Raiders game.
Okay.
And the fact that he started sooner is literally the only reason I picked him.
Yeah, I'd go with Hairston just because of his familiarity with, like, he was on the Broncos, so he's kind of a guy that they brought over from there. But also, I think it's probably Chris Boyd just based off his special teams ability, but I hope we go outside to find a backup nickel corner somewhere is honestly how I kind of feel about the position right now.
It's such a strange position because it's so hard, and yet the NFL doesn't seem to care about it. So, outside cornerbacks get paid a lot. Nickels, like, you can find good ones every year in free agency. So,
Some of them are even named nickel, right? Nickel Roe Coleman. So
there you go.
But no. On that note, I think we've pretty much gone through the roster. We'll kind of reevaluate this after this coming game against the Broncos. So, you know, we'll kind of see where we're at, but, you know, going to kind of wrap it up here. I'm Matt Fries at Fries Football. He's Nick Olson at Nick Olson NFL. Greg Blake, our co-host.
If anything about this podcast you don't like, please send a DM to @ you've been Gregged.
There we go.
You know, all your hate mail, all the technical complaints go there. If you do like what you hear, please give us a 5-star review. It warms the cockles of our hearts. You know, like and subscribe and all that other good stuff. We're on YouTube if you search Kindred Skulls, or we're Kindred Skulls on Spotify. And I think Stitcher is also a podcast service. I don't know, but
@ Kindred Skulls on Twitter as well.
Yeah, there you go. Follow us on Twitter. And that's it. I think goodbye. We love you. Roster cutdowns are 4 p.m. on Tuesday. So Eastern time, that's 3 p.m. Central. So keep an eye out for that. Otherwise, we'll be here next Thursday, Friday morning, unless Greg gets in the way, to talk to you about the Broncos game and, you know, start previewing the Green Bay game.
Yeah,
real Skull football Vikings. Pack, baby. Skull, bye. We love you. Cool, baby.
Another first round corner wouldn't do us any harm. Oh, another first round corner wouldn't do us any harm. Oh, another first round corner wouldn't do us any harm. And we'll all cheer on behind. and we'll score.